mean, wow. The soundtrack to The Lion King. Unbelievable, iconic songs written by Elton John and Tim Rice. But what a lot of people don't know is that Elton John writes the music, not the lyrics. In fact, he was hired first solo to write the songs, but the lyrics were so terrible they had to hire Tim Rice. In fact, the original lyrics were, "It's the circle of life, in the mouth, out the butt. Hot dogs, mayo, grits and corn. It's the circle of life." I'm sorry. We should probably edit all this out. Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight? Bad science. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, and today we're talking about the Academy Award-winning 1994 film The Lion King, which you've probably seen, and if you haven't, that's incredibly strange to me. I feel like everyone on the planet probably has. Joining me are two wonderful guests. First, our old friend from the Memento episode, UCLA psychology professor and director of the Comparative Cognition Lab, Dr. Aaron Blaisdell.
Thank you for having me on here again, Ethan. It feels like it's just been an hour ago since I was here.
I've missed you. I'm so glad that you're back. I'm a little bit upset that you didn't automatically compliment me for getting your name right. I know it's probably just expected that I should get it right at this point, but I thought I would get at least like a...
Some things are so awesome, you don't even have to comment on them. You detract from their awesomeness.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the sun is so massive and powerful. We don't have to talk about it all the time.
Nope.
Yeah, that would be unnecessary. And joining us is comedian and writer Robin Tran.
Yeah, much shorter credit than the other guy.
We can make up some lab that you run if you want.
No. I don't run anything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or run or do anything. So I'm a comedian and a writer, which means I'm very lazy.
Yeah, we were talking about your potential laziness a little bit before the pod. You were
not,
saying
it's
that
not potential
you,
at all. It's very
in
lazy.
Action. It's kinetic laziness.
It's like aggressively lazy. Like sitting up and watching TV is too much work for me.
Wow. Okay.
It's like, oh, I'm overwhelmed. I gotta go lie down. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I got up to do this.
I mean, that's an incredible feat. Then it sounds like
I didn't dress up either.
Totally
like
fine.
You know, I identify as a woman. But since I'm not dressed up, don't worry about the pronouns at all. I don't care at all.
Okay, great. And you know what? Same. You can call me whatever you want. I mean, honestly, you can call me scum maggot, and that's also fine and potentially more accurate.
I even answer to hey you.
Hey, is that what your students call you?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
So disrespectful. Okay, today, like I said, we're talking about The Lion King. Obviously, I grew up on this movie. I've seen it a million times, but I want your guys' take on the film. So when did you first see it? What does it mean to you, etc.?
I saw it when I was a kid. I didn't get it. I didn't really speak English. So I was just like, oh, this is really pretty designs. And
it wasn't translated. You saw it like in English.
Yeah, I was confused because like Simba turned old. And I thought that is like, is that his dad? What happened to the kid? that's how dumb I was, you know.
Right.
I didn't bother to ask anybody. And I saw it again when I was an adult. I think 10 years ago, they re-released it in 3D. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that. That sounds cool, actually.
And I watched it, and then I remember thinking like, wow, that Scar guy is like more evil than I realized. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe this is for children, you know. And I guess. It's a Disney movie, so, you know, everything's kind of basic, and I thought it was a pretty good movie.
Okay.
I don't have the nostalgia, I guess, that a lot of people have over it.
Got you. Okay. I'm gonna hesitate to weigh in until we hear from The Blaze.
The Blaze. I saw it, let's see, it came out when, was it 94?
94, I believe,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I didn't see it in the theater. I was, you know, an adult, and I didn't go to see Disney films in the theater then.
Sure.
Now that I have kids, I do. But I did see it on DVD, and I thought it was awesome. It was one of the better Disney movies, I thought, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I just watched it again yesterday to remind myself of a lot of it. I've seen it a few times over the years. I even saw, when I first moved to L.A., they had the Lion King at the Pantages.
Oh,
the
wow.
show.
Okay.
So I saw
that
too, and that was phenomenal.
Okay.
I mean, that was like that's probably the first like real production show like that I've seen, and it's cool, you know?
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. And now we have the new 2019 Lion King coming out.
Yeah.
they basically remade the trailer. I just saw earlier today a like side by side comparison of the animated trailer with this new trailer.
Oh, cool.
And it's like precisely the same except the effects, obviously.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I mean, why mess up something so good? Is that your take on it?
Yeah, everything is being remade now. I think it's like they're trying to appeal to the nostalgia of millennials now.
Sure.
They're remaking everything. Lion King and, you know, Final Fantasy VII and, you know, just like video games and TV shows. Yeah, they're just remaking everything now.
Right, yeah.
And it's going to... You know, and I feel like it's a cash grab, and I feel upset that it's completely going to work. Like, because it's, I know what they're doing, and I'm upset by it, and it's going to completely, I'm like going to spend money and relive my childhood. Like, oh, this is like the good old days.
I do have to comment on the music of the film, because that, for me, as far as all these Disney, I would say, I guess, I want to say early Disney, but it's really not early Disney. It's just early in my life Disney films. The music was, really, really fantastic in this movie. And I think that was one of the Academy Awards it won. I did read somewhere that Elton John saw like a screening of it early and it didn't have Can You Feel the Love Tonight? And so he had to convince somebody to put it in there. And then it like won best song.
My gosh. That's a cool story.
Wow. It was crazy to me, which is, it's like so obvious. That song is so good. But anyways, first thing that came to my mind with this film is that it's called The Lion King. And lions are often referred to as the king of the jungle. And I was reading some stuff that this is like not exactly accurate. Do you want to touch on that?
In two ways, it's not accurate.
Great.
They don't live in jungles.
Okay.
They
That's
live
a big
in,
one?
Like, yes, yeah, savannas, really.
So the whole movie is, no, it's bad.
Well, they called it The Lion King. They didn't say King of the Jungle.
So
They at least shied away from that.
Yes, you know,
that association.
Yeah. Axl Rose is wrong then.
Yeah.
Does he have a song about
Welcome to the Jungle?
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't know.
About a lion.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
He's still wrong in a lot of ways. Let's come out and say that.
Don't be too hard on the guy.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Slash right behind you, you know.
Yeah.
Just always looking over your shoulder.
That's true.
But in the other way that I guess it would be wrong is that they aren't really, they are a top predator.
Okay.
They are a top predator.
A top predator.
A, exactly. They're a top predator. And then that's actually something I presume we'll be getting into is the relationship between lions and hyenas, because that's a dynamic that was real central to the film.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, let's get into it. Hyenas in the film are like bottom feeders. They're
scavengers.
Yeah.
And that's how they're portrayed in Western culture. That's not how people in Africa think of them, because they aren't generally scavengers. They actually do... A majority of their food comes from hunting it.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're actually competitors with lions in a lot of ways.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. And why in the West does that opinion surface?
I don't know where it came from. It probably came from European explorers that went there and saw their behaviors and maybe saw what looked like scavenging. Because one thing that does happen is if hyenas take down a kill, and it's usually a big animal, a wildebeest or something like zebra or something like that. Then if there are lions nearby, the lions will actually displace the hyenas from the kill.
Whoa.
Because there'll be competition sometimes, and sometimes they'll even be eating the same time on the same animal.
Okay.
But generally, the lions would displace, because they work in groups also, and they'll displace the hyena or hyenas. And the hyenas will go off a few hundred yards and kind of wait for the lions to finish and then go away. And then the hyenas will come back to their kill. So might be, you know, early explorers saw that second part and thought, oh, they're scavenging from lions. But actually ethologists who study them in the wild, I boned up on this because it's not my area of research as much, but I read a bit of this and I recently, so I realized that actually they do a lot of their own hunting. There's a
very cool.
Even though there is a lot of competition between them, they do seem to coexist pretty well.
Okay.
Wow. I see hyenas in a different light now.
Yeah.
I'm very upset at the movie. I've hated hyenas my whole life. There was a Lion King video game that I played, and the hyenas were really hard to kill and bad guys, you know? So thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be a tough move to pick a bad guy animal in the first place, probably. You know,
yeah,
because I mean, no matter what, somebody's going to get pissed off. Like I was looking at some of the controversy, and I think part of it was it says hyena biologists protested against the animal's portrayal. One hyena researcher sued Disney Studios for defamation of character.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, it touched a nerve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ethologists, you don't want to rub them the wrong way.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So, wait, what makes them, because they're small little guys. So,
hyenas are not small.
They're not small.
No, I mean, they're smaller than lions. Yes, oh, okay. Which is why lions would normally displace them. But they're not that small. I mean, they're pretty substantial and they're really like heavy built.
Okay.
Actually, they're kind of both heavy built and they're fast. They're what's called cursorial hunters.
Whoa.
Or cursorial animals. Cursorial. Those are animals that move around a lot.
Okay.
Whereas lions ambush. They'll sit. They can't run for very long.
Oh.
But hyenas can run for a lot longer. So hyenas chase down their prey for a lot longer. Whereas the lions will sit and wait for the prey to get close and then just do a sprint.
Is that what makes them an effective killer? Is that they will, you know, out-stamina a zebra or something?
Yeah, well, what they do is they go as a group or even sometimes just individually into a herd. And they'll kind of cause disruption and the herd starts running different ways, the animals, and they'll kind of identify one that's a little bit slower or something and target it and go after that one.
Wow.
And just wear it down.
Yeah. It seems like there's more honor in what hyenas do than lions. Is that?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
They kind of have to work harder.
It's not cool that they didn't get the movie.
Yeah.
Lions got the movie.
Maybe we should make a remake from the hyena's perspective.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? So like,
that's a thing now, isn't it? Like making movies from an alternate perspective.
Well, yeah, I love that.
It'd be funny if like the hyena saw the lions getting on TV and stuff getting jealous. Why are they getting all the credit? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
The hyena prince is what we need.
There you go.
You know, we need their story told.
Yeah.
And in royal fashion. You know? Like all the that was another, I don't know, somebody else had issues with like the fact that it seemed like only the like beautiful and strong are the ones in charge of everybody in this world.
Well, there's to some degree that's actually true.
Okay.
In the animal kingdom, when there is hierarchy and competition within a group, it's usually the strongest animal that, like with male competition, like running a pride, it would be the stronger ones that would prevail unless there's a coalition, which is actually. Hyenas, again, are different from lions that way. Lions, it's more about kind of the dominant strong male will oust another male or will kind of take over the harem generally.
Okay.
Whereas for hyenas, it's very different. It's actually a lot like, people don't probably know what baboon troops are like, but it turns out that they're very similar to baboon troops in the sense that it's the females that run the show for hyenas.
Oh.
In fact, the top male hyena in the group will be subordinate to the bottom lowest ranking female within that group.
Wow. For baboons and for
that's
hyenas.
True. Yep. That's true. Baboons and vervets are what they call the circopithecoid monkeys, like the African monkeys.
Okay.
And that's true in hyenas apparently too, for some reason. They have that same social structure. So the
another reason, sorry to interrupt, that hyenas seem cooler.
Yeah, hyenas seem cooler.
Yeah, they are cool.
They
are related to cats actually. More than to canids, dogs.
Okay, great.
Wow.
Well, I love cats. So for me, that's another point.
But they fill a dog-like niche.
Oh.
So they are physically and also behaviorally a little bit more like wolves or other type of dog species in the niche they fill in Africa.
Oh, jeez. How so? In the like grand ecosystem?
Yeah, and like wolves also chase down large prey.
Ah.
Right, and work as coordinated hunters. And hyenas work as coordinated hunters. Now, lions also work as coordinated hunters, but they do it more of a sit and a hunt and wait. Sit and wait for the game to get close, a stealth approach.
Got you. Is that more of a dog thing?
The running cursorial, as we call it?
Yeah, like I'm trying to picture the difference here between how the, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but cat species hunts and dog species hunts. Because you're
felids,
saying felids.
Yeah, felids are all the cats and canids are all the dogs, wolves, foxes, coyotes. Felids and canids.
And canids.
Yeah.
Felids and canids. Okay,
felids
so.
Felids are much more sit and wait, except for the cheetah.
Oh, cheetah will run you down.
But leopards, tigers, and lions, they sit and wait.
Okay.
Or sneak up on the prey.
Very cool. I have a bunch of lion questions. I have I didn't know a lot of this stuff about lions. So first of all, Simba goes off and you know, he's emotionally upset because he thinks he killed his father when actually it was Scar, who's played by the brilliant Jeremy Irons. So good, very scary, as Robin was mentioning.
Yep.
That'll give you nightmares if yeah. you're not careful.
I mean, Jeremy Irons gives me nightmares anyway.
Just in general.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I have to mention that I did read that the animators like took part of Jeremy Irons' performances, like his facial expressions, and made Scar look more like Jeremy Irons because of it. They were like, this guy's awesome. So I thought that was great because he was also like not originally supposed to be him, but they were like, no, this is the guy, this is Scar. But anyways, okay, so he goes off and he's like on his own. And so how often does that happen? What is the life cycle of the lion?
Well, male lions actually will go off and live on their own or in groups of other males called coalitions.
Okay.
If especially it's the case if a male is born in a pride and there are already a few resident males, dominant males in that pride, there's no more room for other males to be part of that group. When they kind of reach sexual maturity in about, I think, 4 years or so, they will kind of peel off and either go solo, maybe try and join another pride somewhere else when they get big enough to challenge the male there.
Right, yeah.
Or team up with some friends.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but they don't leave because they're depressed because their dad died, you know? Like, I don't think that's accurate.
Well, it's hard to get inside the mind of the animal.
I thought that's what you were here for, so.
Exactly. I'm here to tell you, this is what I do for a living. It's very hard.
But what I do is hard. That's so funny. I mean, Robin, you know about that. You can get in the head of a lion. How hard is that?
Yeah.
Tell me what they're thinking.
Yeah, they speak English in the movie, you know? They're telling me how they feel.
Right.
Yeah.
That's totally accurate.
So, yeah, they don't necessarily join other prides. They have to, like, wait until they're strong enough
right.
to challenge whoever the strongest male is.
Yep.
And they kind of just, they take them over.
Yeah, that's what they do. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's really scary. So I wanted to also ask about their monogamy, for lack of a better word, like how he seems to fall in love with Nala.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to ask if they were maybe related, because it seems like that's kind of a small lion pack that they have there. So does that happen? I have lion love questions.
Good questions. In the animal kingdom, as long as you're like first cousin related or further, mm-hmm. it's pretty safe. Like mating is not really much of an issue. It's once sibling mating or parent offspring matings are not, you know, they're frowned upon. It doesn't happen a lot. Although I learned recently from somebody who studies crow behavior in the wild and she was doing genetic analysis of the crows. It turned out one of the clutches of crows in the group she was studying was produced by the mom and one of her previous sons from the previous clutch.
Whoa.
So it happens.
Okay.
You got these documented cases, and it's probably possibly happening with lions too. But generally, yeah, the lions there would be some amount of outbreeding.
Okay. And they know somehow who's related to who.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They generally know pretty well.
They know pretty well.
We don't know all the ways that they do, but some of it's chemical.
Oh,
and wow. Some of it's just like you grow up with, you know, surrounded by these individuals nursing, you know, this one's nursing on that mom and that one's nursing on the other mom. Then they kind of learn who's who.
Got you. Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. You were saying how the females in the hyena group are the ones running the show. So what are the females doing in these lion packs?
What are the females? Oh, the female lions.
If they're not right, yeah.
they hunt usually as a group.
Oh, okay.
They sometimes hunt solo, but the females tend to hunt more as a group.
Like they go to the bathroom together. It's kind of like that.
It's
kind
of
right?
like that.
Yeah, okay.
Very similar.
Okay.
And the males in the group, there was this long time belief that the males just sat around and wait for the females to kill something, and then the males would come in, oh, I'm the male, and come and eat, you know, a lot of the kill.
Yeah, it does sound like what a lion would sound like.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It's spontaneous. But actually, the males also hunt, okay. And they just tend to hunt solo.
Oh, okay.
Maybe they're bigger and they can more easily take down prey. There is what's called sexual dimorphism. The males are larger than the females. Mm. And that's in part driven by the male-male competition.
Okay.
In species where males compete with each other. Like think elk you know, the males are much bigger than the females. And even in there, they have like the large antlers. And so that's for competition purpose.
Yeah, they like smash against each other and stuff, right?
Right.
Okay.
Whereas for like humans, for example, although there is sexual dimorphism, men tend to be larger than women. It's much reduced compared to the African and other apes, like chimpanzees, gorillas, orangutans, where there's a much larger difference between males and females because there's more male-male competition in the African apes and other apes. Whereas humans, when we split from apes, we became much more of a egalitarian, pro-social species.
Got you. Well, speaking of apes, we have Rafiki in this movie, who's fantastic.
Who's a monkey, yeah.
Yep, full of wisdom.
Is that with a stick?
The guy, yep. He has a stick. He's got a red butt.
That's a baboon for you, yeah.
Yeah, I've that's what I was going to ask about, because I saw that some people are saying it's like a mixture of a baboon and a mandrill.
That's what I thought, too. They called him a baboon in the movie, I think.
Yes.
But actually, he looks more like a mandrill to me. But a mandrill is really a type of baboon. I mean, they're closer related types of animals.
Are baboons that scary in real life? I mean, that's a horrifying creature.
It does look real strange.
Yeah, I still get scared of it. I'm 32
They
years
look
old.
Scary.
You're scared of every character in this movie.
It's a terrifying movie. Yeah, it's a traumatic movie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a horror.
I actually did work with a juvenile male baboon as an undergraduate.
What? Really?
Yeah.
That's adorable.
And he was cute. He was about 4 years old, which is still juvenile stage.
Oh, wow.
And it was living on his own. It was in a primate facility at the time. Now they wouldn't really keep them on their own. They would have them as part of a group, even in a primate facility usually.
Okay.
But he was really fun. I mean, he would play ball like a dog in a way.
Oh, wow.
And
what was his name?
He wasn't Tony.
Tony.
Yeah. I still remember him. I have really good memories of Tony.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, bring him in.
Well, I don't everyone, have access we, to Tony we have anymore. A special guest today, Tony the baboon.
Pull up a mic. Tony. He's Italian. Yeah, I don't know. Was there a reason you think that they made the baboon, sage?
Well, baboons do live a long time. So primates are a long-lived species, and they kind of look like little men, maybe.
Sure.
Right? So maybe they just kind of thought that would be a cool role for a baboon. You know, like for that role, it's some wise man, an elder wise person in the savanna ecosystem, right?
Right.
Because that's kind of like what the Lion King's about, is like this balance of the ecosystem. And so I guess for having the role of the wise man, that makes sense. That would be a primate, first of all. And a baboon is a savanna primate.
Okay. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't have anything to add. This is fascinating stuff. Yeah, okay. I just want to say this is really interesting.
I'm trying to stay away from the scary parts.
You mean the entire movie?
Yeah. Stop mentioning animals. It's freaking him out. Okay, so a huge question I had during the film is like the relationship between all these animals together, because I don't know which ones are able to interact with which ones. I mean, obviously lions interact with lions. They have this relationship with hyenas you were mentioning, where like they displace them and get them away from their food and sort of share a zebra carcass.
Sometimes hyenas can displace the lions too. That could happen.
Oh, okay. So like they get right. You were saying like they go in there and
they can actually make a kill, and then if there's like a larger group of hyenas, they can displace the lion or a couple of lions.
Okay, but do you think all of these animals would be able to have some sort of relationship to each other? Would they? I don't want to say hang out, but visit and have some sort of friendly back and forth.
Not generally. Okay. Not in the way, of course, it's depicted. Because really, they're trying to depict like a human-like society, but where the animals are the humans, so to speak.
Okay.
All right. But now what you do have in Africa is, because there's large grasslands, and then there's these like localized water sources, watering holes that are far apart from each other. Those watering holes are places where all the different animals, the herbivores and warthogs and the lions and hyenas would actually congregate there and not generally bother each other. It's almost like this rule that when you're near the watering hole, you leave the other ones around, whether you're the predator or the prey. It's kind of, it's an interesting dynamic.
Oh, so it's a lot, very segregated.
Generally.
The animal kingdom. In, very, I mean, they're all racist. They don't like to mix together. Is
they
that what
don't
you're saying?
Mix.
Unless they're at this special sacred place, watering hole, I guess. Yeah.
But
which I don't
separate
know.
Separate but equal.
Separate. There's different watering holes, right?
Can't drink from that.
Yeah. It's fine. No one can eat each other here for some reason. Although that would be like the place to do it.
Right.
Right. If you're like a pack of hungry hyenas or something.
Yeah. Well, now, of course, I don't know what stops them. Something stops them.
Yeah.
A conscience. They're run by women
yep.
who have consciences.
That's right.
Right.
Okay.
Are lions more violent than
lions?
Than hyenas.
They both can be violent, but hyenas are more violent with each other.
Uh huh.
And lions are more violent, like, to everybody else.
Yeah, I see. It's just like human beings, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of parallels there.
Yeah.
unintended parallels, probably.
Yeah.
From Disney's perspective.
More than likely, yeah. And speaking of that, I have to mention this, and we'll get back to animals, I promise you. But there was another point of controversy, which I either completely forgot about because it wasn't interesting to me and I have selective memory, or because I just never heard about this. So there was a Japanese cartoon. I don't know if it was a TV show or a film exactly, and that's on me for not knowing, but it was called Kimba and the White Lion. Do you know about this?
No.
Nope.
Okay, guys, check this out. So they had a protest in Japan in 94 when The Lion King came out. It's the creator of Kimba and the White Lion. Over there, it's like cultural icons, this thing. Mm-hmm. It was there were 488 Japanese cartoonists and animators, and they all signed this petition accusing Disney of plagiarism and demanding that they give due credit to Tezuka. Well, I guess is this guy who created it.
Creator.
Osamu Tezuka. And there's just so many similarities between this thing. And
we should have watched that too.
I know. When I was reading this, I was like, oh my God, I should really see this just because it's probably insane. Like, because it was out years before.
Like a movie or something?
I think it was a show that like ran for a while, but I'll list some of the similarities. So first of all, obviously Kimba and Simba are like the same name.
Yeah.
And they're both the protagonist lion. And then there's evil lions in both. In Kimba, there's a one-eyed claw or like a one-eyed evil lion named Claw instead of Scar. And then there's also a sage baboon. And then there's like the same bird. It's called Polycracker in Kimba and the White Lion instead of Zazu. And then there's two like quirky or funny hyena sidekicks instead of the trio in the Lion King.
They have a song called Makuna Hatata.
Yeah.
So weird. So weird. I don't know
it's
why
a
we
huge
didn't
do Japanese for eating some sushi, right?
Yeah. Huge Japanese hit. Makuna Hatata. What was it? Ugh, that's so good. So yeah, I just didn't know about that, and I thought that was absolutely wild. And then there was the famous Sex in the Clouds.
I remember
the
this controversy. Yeah,
yeah. There's like a freeze frame moment where it spells out sex, like the animators wrote "sex" in the clouds.
People see sex everywhere.
I mean, that's a good point, but from a psychology standpoint, exactly. Probably seeing what they want to see.
How did people see it back then? Like, I mean, it was harder to pause and all that stuff, right? Or
I think it was one of the best-selling VHSs in history. So it was probably, people just
pausing.
It was on the news, I remember.
Yeah.
They played The Lion King on like ABC7 or something. And then on the news afterwards, like controversy with sex. And I didn't know what freeze framing was. So they just kept showing Simba on top of his girlfriend. And then they just kept saying sex. Like this whole huge controversy. Like, there's inappropriate. And I'm like, but you guys are the ones that keep saying the word sex.
Yeah.
And I'm a kid, you know? And I'm like, I didn't see it at all. You know, but Disney did that kind of stuff a lot, didn't they? Like, there's a lot of.
So I can't take a firm stance on one or the other. I have not done enough research. All that I know is that I did read a thing from an animator named Tom Sito, who worked on The Lion King, that says that they put in the abbreviation for special effects, SFX.
Oh. Okay.
And it can look like sex, which I can't believe they didn't realize. That's crazy. But it was intended as an innocent signature created by the effects animation team.
I don't buy it.
Mm. It's, yeah, it's pretty rough. I mean, first of all, why would you need to do that?
Yeah.
You may, you know what I mean?
What part don't you buy?
It's just like, yeah, this doesn't look like anything bad. You know, like, you don't think anyone would, like, would point that out? Like, hey, guys, I know this is SFX, but do you think it's like, nah, don't worry. No, like, no one said anything.
So you think maybe they really thought maybe sneak that in there?
Yeah, like, oh, we have plausible deniability, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come on, it's Disney. Wait, am I allowed to say that? Am I going to get, like, killed or something, you know, if I make fun of Disney?
No, they're across town.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm just saying Disney has done a lot of, like, weird sexual innuendos in a lot of their movies. Like,
yeah.
In The Little Mermaid, I think there was the guy that was marrying them, the priest. Was it the priest or the reverend?
I don't know.
And it looked like his knee was going up, but it looked like a boner.
Oh, gosh,
it looked like
really?
He was getting an erection. Yeah, you can see. You can look up all these on
now
YouTube.
I want to watch these films.
There's a few. Yeah, there's a few of them from what I recall.
And on the cover of the Little Mermaid VHS or DVD cover, there is a penis, like on the castle. Like, instead of like a little scepter thing, it's like a it's a penis.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Just like, oh yeah, no, the scepter just looks like a penis. Like, no, I don't buy it.
Yeah, yeah, she's right.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Okay.
Yep, I've seen these things.
Disney, you can, this is what I'm an expert on.
There you go.
Secret penises. And people should check out your podcast, Secret Penises.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a fallacy.
Yeah, well, it's not a secret anymore.
Okay, great. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Yeah, I had more just like, and these might be super silly, and feel free to tell me if I'm being a total schmuck. But Simba starts living with Timon and Pumbaa,
right?
Which I want to get to and touch on meerkats and warthogs. But while he's there, they tell him to start eating bugs, and so I was just curious if lions eat bugs and if they could live off a diet of bugs.
If they had enough bugs, they would be. They're nutritious. They could live off of them.
Okay.
I don't think they do live off of them because I think it would be getting the quantity.
Right.
They eat like 15 pounds of meat a day.
Whoa.
Oh, my
15
gosh.
Pounds?
So imagine, like, that's a lot of bugs to get 15 pounds worth. I mean,
15 pounds of bugs.
All the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about a perspective movie. Like, the bugs that are getting eaten by Simba.
Damn, good call.
It's like, oh my gosh, he's wiping out our whole species.
Yeah.
Trying to get 15 pounds of us a day.
Now,
what
bugs
a monster
do
Simba.
Do reproduce a lot, yeah. So you wouldn't worry too much about it, just from one line.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair, yeah. But I do like this really sad insect story where just families are being ripped apart
by just Simba.
There you go. Yeah, there's another Simba. Alternate take movie, you know, from the bug's perspective.
Yeah.
These three dominant, you know, it's like Godzilla and Mothra and this other one move in at the same time and terrorize your local neighborhood of Bugville.
Right? I think Pumbaa would look the most horrifying out of this. Like, oh my gosh, what is this thing?
Yeah. So it's, in a lot of ways, it is a horror film. I mean, we're really getting down to it. Okay.
All depends on whose perspective you take.
Yes. And same with life, guys. Step in other people's shoes sometimes, you know? Okay. So probably not living off bugs. Probably not eating bugs very often.
I don't think they do. I know, you know, cubs will chase bugs or little things like that because they're just learning how to hunt.
Okay.
And like they practice that.
Yeah.
But as adults, I don't think they eat really
not so much.
Bugs.
And is their diet just straight meat?
My understanding is that's it. Yeah.
That's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. They don't get their veggies. They don't need their veggies, maybe.
I don't know enough about that, but it's possible that, you know, they'll chew on grass now and then. Sometimes animals will do that. Cats, house cats will do that.
I just gave my house cat some grass recently because she was having some digestion problems and it was suggested. And so we got some grass and she ate it. So grass is good for the stomach?
Maybe in small amounts, like the roughage and the polyphenols, you know, chemicals that are in leafy greens, leafy material.
Okay.
Can act as a digestive or, you know, help things move along or have a small medicinal effect. So, pure carnivores, some of them will occasionally eat
some grass.
Bits of grass or something.
Mm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So why don't we eat grass like Lola, my cat?
Hey, speak for yourself, you know. A little bit of grass for lunch, you know.
Well, I can order us some grass on Grubhub if you guys are hungry.
Greens, right?
Yeah, yeah, like that's grass. Yeah. That's similar grass, yeah. Okay, and then would Simba eat Zazu, the bird?
The bird. Possibly. If he's on his own and he's like hunting and he's young and experienced, because he left the pride when he was just a cub still.
Right.
Yeah.
So if such a scenario actually happened, he would go after small game. Yeah. Like that.
Small game is game.
Exactly.
Okay. You know, you'd be outraged if he ate the bird.
Yeah, early
talking
on.
About a character that is no longer just sympathetic at all.
And then, of course, perspective movie from the bird getting wrecked by Simba.
There you go.
Okay. And then I read, I don't know if this is true, but I read that they like will try to either kill their young or that the young will kill... Infanticide. Yeah. Can you tell me about that?
Infanticide is a real thing.
Okay.
And usually the conditions under which it's adults that would kill infants. Okay. It would be adult males. For lions, it would be adult males that would kill the infants. Usually that happens when one male ousts another and takes over the pride. Then that male, the new male, will kill the young.
Whoa.
And there's a few different species that do this. Cats do this.
What?
Even house cats have been shown to do this.
No. Why?
Sorry. Because what happens is it then speeds up the process of the females going back into a reproductive viability so that they can then mate and have their own offspring. So you think about if the male, the new male, those offspring are not its progeny.
Right.
So its own genetics are not in those cubs.
Wow.
And so by killing them, one, it's not giving resources, devoting resources to those cubs that are not his. And two, the females, especially the ones that are nursing those cubs, will no longer be nursing. And nursing it suppresses ovulation. And so the females are no longer nursing. So now they start ovulating again. So they'll be receptive and fertile.
Whoa.
Wow, there's a lot of justification for killing a kid.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you need it.
There are primates that do this too.
Yeah.
In Asia, there's primates called langurs, and they also showed this. And Sarah Hurdy's a professor, really studied a lot of this infanticide in langurs, and then it was discovered in African lions as well.
Man.
So are you saying that what Scar was trying to do to Simba was kind of accurate?
Yes and no. Yes, it's accurate when a male comes in, but usually brothers they form a coalition and they'll work together, like they'll run the pride together.
Oh, okay.
And so they normally if they're brothers that closely related, they actually would be trying to protect the pride from other intruding males.
Wow.
So that's a very human thing, right?
Wow.
Like for one, the younger or the non-inheriting prince to want to oust the kids so that he could become the next king. That's a very human thing, not a lion thing.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Scar would be... But then again, Scar was pretty rotten.
Yeah.
He was.
So he's even evil to the lions.
Really was.
Yeah. How evil Scar was. Yeah.
Even other lions are like, hey, man. Like,
he was very human.
The brothers, like, I heard the scientists on the podcast that brothers aren't supposed to do this, man, but Scar.
Lions listening to podcasts is my dream.
That's all I want. A whole new market for you.
Yeah. So true. Okay. So I also think infanticide sounds too much like fantasy. Those words are too close. It should be, I'm just saying, the word should be something a little more.
It is kind of goofy sounding.
Infanticide.
Well, yeah.
Killing of infants.
Listen.
Like pesticide, killing of pets. Pests, not pets.
Pesticide.
Pesticide, you know, right?
Yeah.
Herbicide, you're killing plants, herbs, like weeds. So if you kill infants.
What about suicide?
Infanticide. Well, that's killing yourself.
Sue killing self.
Sue. It's only when somebody named Sue.
Yeah, somebody
named Sue. Killing people named Sue.
That's what suicide. I didn't know that. I thought it was killing oneself. Only for named Sue. Okay, so I'm sorry. I'm just really stuck on this whole we're going to kill our young because they're not our young thing.
Okay.
And so what you're telling me is that if I have a house cat and I bring her home and I already have a kitten that's not hers, there's a chance that when I leave, that kitten will die.
It would be another male. So a male is sired kittens with the female cat.
Uh-huh.
And then the male left and you brought another male home. He might.
This is toxic masculinity. How do we teach? What kind of blogs can we show these cats?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you think about it. It might sound terrible, but it's an effective strategy to pass your genes on. Yeah. So if you think about it as a functional evolutionary
the smile he gives
yeah.
me.
Inappropriate smile.
Creepy. It's actually a very...
Blaze, I love you, brother, but why do you want to kill these kids, man? It's not effective, okay? Don't promote that on my podcast, please.
I'm not promoting it. I'm just explaining it.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. You're right. Explaining it, but the look on your face is really suggestive.
Yeah, he's very delighted.
Radio show.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that Robin is here to let everybody know what side you're on of the... infanticide. Yeah, that's really so what animals do this besides you said lions, you said cats. Are there is it
and langurs, which are a type of Asian monkey, and
which is wild to me because at least in my head they're like more closely related to humans, so that's a strange thing.
Well, it's convergent evolution.
Okay,
so similar social structures,
right,
led to similar, usually when you have harem situations, that is where, harem, that's what they're called by ethologists. I didn't make this term up.
Okay.
But when you have one male or a few males that controlling a bunch of reproductive females, that social structure is called a harem.
Okay.
And baboons, the hamadryas baboon in Africa also have this harem structure, langurs, lions. That would be the kind of structure where that would evolve.
Okay.
Or could evolve.
Okay. Really scary. Don't kill your kids, guys. That's my suggestion for
and
today.
And don't join a harem.
And don't join a harem. That also sounds scary. Okay. So let's talk for a second about meerkats. I don't really know anything about meerkats. Not sure what you know.
I have no idea.
Okay, great. I just know that they look really cute.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't even know how to like accurately describe a meerkat
right.
to somebody else.
It's be a great test.
Yeah, it's okay. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's like a squirrel looking thing or like a weasel, I guess.
Weasel.
Okay.
Actually, a type of mongoose.
A type of mongoose.
Which is, you know, the weasel families, mongooses, weasels, meerkats.
Oh.
Yeah. They're a kind of carnivore.
Okay.
Right. And so
they probably wouldn't eat bugs either.
They do eat bugs because they're small. So they're small carnivores. Ah. So they do eat a lot of insects and like frogs or
eggs. Oh, they eat frogs? Oh, no.
You love frogs?
No, I just think they're adorable. You know, I don't eat the frogs. Well. I used to like meerkats. But anyway, go on.
Boy. I'm just trashing everything.
I would have loved to see Timon eat a frog, by the way. Yeah. That would have been great.
Yeah, they go down well.
Is the size, so you're saying the size was fairly accurate?
Yeah,
there?
I mean, they're about like...
Okay.
Like about a foot and a half,
that
maybe
still
when
seems
they say a
cute.
Foot and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, and they live in these large groups.
Okay.
Like up to 30 or 40 individuals and they do tunnel and they live in the savanna, not quite as much in the forest, more in the open savanna.
Mm-hmm.
They live in groups and they usually, when you see like pictures of them or you see them at the zoo, they're like, they're a whole bunch standing up, looking around like on their hind legs.
Yeah.
And it's because the way they forage, while some of them are eating, others will stand up and, you know, keep a lookout.
Wow.
And if they see anything potentially threatening, dangerous, they'll start vocalizing, you know, let the others know that there's, you know, sort of a warning system.
Cool.
So they know they're doing something wrong. Like, hey, can we keep a lookout?
Yeah.
Fred, don't
just
worry.
In case.
Fred,
hey, the buzz
yeah,
are here.
Yeah, Fred's over there looking out for us. Don't worry about it.
Right? That seems like a rare thing, too.
Zootopia, too. That would be something they should do. Have the meerkats be the ones that are, like, trying to break in and the ones to look out. And
great call.
There you go.
If you're listening. Like that's some credit for the place.
Like Ocean's right. 11, but with meerkats.
Oh, yeah. I would love that. I would love a fun cartoon version of Ocean's 11, actually, now that I'm thinking like about that. It.
They're just trying to find frogs to eat, you know, in the end.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's pretty rare that, like, a bunch of animated characters are pulling off a heist in one of these movies, you know? Like, that's never the case.
No.
So, well, we got to turn that corner, guys. We need that. The Warthog, Pumbaa,
mm-hmm.
that also accurate. I, again, would have a hard time describing. That's like a mini rhino way? Little pig.
Well, what? A mini what?
I called it a mini rhino because it has those like husks.
Oh, those, looking, yeah, those tusks or the tusks, teeth?
Yeah.
Yeah, those, but those are teeth, whereas a rhino's whoa. Horn is a horn. It's not a tooth structure.
Oh, okay.
Right. So and they're a type of pig. I mean, they're in the pig family.
Got you.
The warthogs. Okay.
Yeah, it did do some oinking now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like.
And there were pig jokes in there.
Were there pig jokes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
About the, like when they were trying when Simba was an adult and was coming back to challenge Scar, and Pumbaa and Timon were like trying to distract the hyenas.
Uh-huh.
And Timon was in the little Hawaiian outfit and was pretending like Pumbaa had an apple in his mouth like he was a Hawaiian pig, right?
That's
I didn't
right.
even think he said something about bacon or something.
Okay, so,
Do they taste good?
Probably.
Oh. Okay.
Humans hunt them.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay.
Lions good. Will hunt them.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some warthog and cream cheese is in your future.
Ooh.
Warthog bacon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like even better than like the Razorbacks, right?
The Razorbacks,
which are the wild pigs in the Appalachians.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
They cook those also.
Yes, yeah. Oh, you gotcha. Hunt them. Any okay. kind of wild boar.
Yeah,
yeah. I bet
got
they would taste
of, good. Got a lot of pork that we can try
because they're omnivores again. Like so, that was pretty accurate. They do eat insects.
And, oh, okay.
And they also eat lots of like you know leaves, tubers, some grass, a variety of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Pumbaa farts. And everybody hates it.
Yep.
And they leave. So I wanted to ask about animals farting. Do they do that as often as
animals
humans?
Do fart.
Mm-hmm.
And they differ in the degree to which they do.
Okay.
And it depends on what their diet is.
Ah.
So animals that eat a lot more roughage have more gas because you have bacterial fermentation. Now, for cows, you know, they always talk about cow farts.
Yes.
As being like, you know,
bad
for the environment.
Yeah.
It's actually burps. They're actually burping up methane.
Yes,
it's not
this.
Coming out the rear end. Most of that gas is escaping from the front end. That's because the bacterial fermenting tank is in the front part of their stomach.
Wow.
Now, chimps and gorillas, on the other hand, I have worked with chimps too.
Okay.
And I can tell you, yes. They have gas.
Stinky
and
farts.
It comes out of the rear ends because they're more hindgut fermenters as the bacteria that break down like the insoluble fiber and roughage.
And I assume we're the same way.
Yeah.
Is in the back. And we're hindgut fermenters too.
Oh, hindgut okay. fermenters.
Did you look that up after they kept farting? You're like, okay, I got to look up these monkey farts.
I got to see what's going on
this
here.
It's disgusting.
I had read about fermentation in animals. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is there an anti-smelly fart diet? That you can put these animals on / like humans.
Are you asking for yourself?
Asking for a friend.
Oh, okay.
Nicely done. Well, if you don't eat as much of that roughage, you'll have less material to, you know, for the bacteria to metabolize and produce CO2 as a, or other fart content as a byproduct.
Okay.
And so, I don't know.
But isn't roughage a healthy thing to eat?
In sufficient quantities.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot that we still don't know. For humans in particular, there's still a lot we don't know about how much roughage do we need, how much fiber or whatever, let's say, you know, in the context of plants, do we actually need for a healthy, you know, gut?
Wow. It's fascinating. It's fascinating that after so much time, we still make stinky farts, right? Shouldn't we have that solved already? Seems basic.
Well, you can always buy those underwear that have the charcoal layer, you know.
What?
I swear to God,
what
I
is
saw
that?
An ad for this the other day. And this, seriously, it's underwear that you can wear around your backside. Uh-huh. There's a layer sewn into it, basically charcoal, I think, of some kind of,
okay.
in such like a thin layer.
Sure.
Right? Because that is a deodorizer.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Wow.
So it doesn't start smelling like a barbecue?
Every time you fart, someone thinks their ribs cooking.
Ribs cooking. No, it's not burnt charcoal.
Okay.
It's like, more like a thin layer of activated charcoal or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that like weird black stuff they put in my coffee randomly at these like high-end coffee shops in LA. They're like, oh, would you like a activated charcoal latte?
Oh, is that a thing now?
Yeah, that's a thing now.
I saw an ad on Facebook that you can use charcoal to brush your teeth to make it whiter. Have you heard that?
Yeah, ooh. That probably would work.
Oh, probably
that would work. Wow.
Well, I mean, charcoal, even though it's black in color, what it does is it attracts. I don't know the exact chemistry of it, but something about charcoal, it attracts things and it removes them.
Okay. Wow.
So, like,
are there any potential cons to either putting this in your mouth or on your butt?
I can't think of any.
Okay.
Wow.
If you have too much of it, yeah. But you can small amounts of it, and it's actually not a problem at all.
Isn't it also a hangover thing? Don't people use charcoal for that purpose as well?
I don't know. Do they?
I thought that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe. I've been wrong before.
Well, charcoal sounds magic now.
Charcoal is kind of magic, yeah. This might be ending on a dark note, I guess. Uh-oh. But there's an elephant graveyard in the film.
Mm.
And I was reading that elephants don't usually go off and die in the same place. Like, there wouldn't be...
elephant graveyard.
Yes. Does that make sense?
I'll trust what you read.
Okay. So, unsure.
It doesn't seem like there would be such a thing.
Right. Okay. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, I was picturing like tombstones and stuff, and I thought you were going to say most elephants.
Here lies.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah, it's just like a bone. Like, I think that's where the hyenas were. It was like the Badlands or whatever.
Kill, like which there generally wouldn't be for elephants. People don't hunt large amounts of elephants and even lions. They would... If they could get one, it would just be one.
Right.
So I wouldn't see how they can all congregate.
Oh, yeah, a bunch of big bones. I mean, somebody clearly just thought, like, man, wouldn't this be cool?
Well, I mean, there's this idea of it. I've heard the concept of an elephant graveyard.
Oh.
I mean, I think it's a thing, like a concept that's been around, a meme that's been around. I don't know where it got started.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I got to look that up. Or you guys at home, look it up and email me about the origins of an elephant graveyard, because I just have no idea. And then probably from a more proactive standpoint, I guess a lot of these animals are probably endangered in trouble.
Mostly because of habitat, taking over the habitat. And there's just not enough area. This kind of environment, a savanna ecosystem, requires very large areas for animals to migrate.
Yeah.
Because there are dry seasons when there's a lot less water. So they have to migrate a lot further to get to water sources. It becomes much drier. So to get to food, they'll have to travel around further. Mm-hmm. And so by parceling up the African Serengeti and savannah in general into nations and cities, and then these are preserves and they could live there, only there. And it has been very disruptive.
Wow. Is there something we can do? Do you want to call out anyone whose fault it is by name?
People.
Ouch.
Humanity. It's humanity.
Well, Rob and I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So.
No, actually, though, what's interesting, one thing that's interesting is that the large African mammals like elephants have survived in the context of humans, whereas everywhere else around the globe humans went, the largest animals, the megafauna, tended to go extinct, like mammoths and mastodons, giant ground sloths, which are like as big as a rhino. These things went extinct as humans moved into Eurasia and the Americas, Australia. But in Africa, there's this idea that maybe because these large animals evolved along with humans, as humans were evolving from, the ape ancestor, the ancestor with chimps, to the modern very sophisticated hunters of humans, they were able to evolve strategies to avoid being hunted to extinction.
Wow.
Some amount of coexistence.
Coexistence sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, that's very good.
We could do a little bit more of that. However, I do love the ivory Everything in my house is made of ivory, and I just can't get enough of it. You know, my shoes.
They could probably make that in a dish now, right? Like they have the Impossible Burger.
Yeah, why
they
not?
They could probably make ivory, grow it from stem cells. And,
yeah.
You know, Bart Simpson got a pet elephant on The Simpsons, and I think that that episode is why elephants are still around.
Oh, that's the
stupidest theory.
I think that makes sense. That was that got a grant approved to protect the elephants.
The pro-elephant propaganda.
Yeah. So poachers, if you're listening, watch some Simpsons and learn how to just make it in a lab. Stop being lazy.
Go to Silicon Valley and figure out.
Yeah,
get
African
some VC
poachers.
Money and figure out how to make ivory in the lab.
It's not so tough. Just do the right thing, guys. Jesus Christ. All right. We have a plug section here at the end. Robin, you want to tell people something about you?
Sure. Just Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, RobinTran04. You can find me.
RobinTran04. What's the significance of the four, if I might ask?
Oh, the 04 is, it comes from my high school graduation year that I just never grew up from.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's, you know, what's funny is that I'm so lazy that when I transitioned, I didn't even change my email, and it's still RobertTran04.
So you still give that out to people? Yes.
They're like, oh my God, you didn't even... I'm like, that's how lazy I am.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, you just remember RobinTran04.
Great. All right, RobinTran04. Sir. Sir
Blaisdell. I'm not knighted yet, so you don't have to call me Sir yet.
I mean, I'm predicting it'll happen soon.
Ooh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You have some insider information then?
Yeah, yeah. I'm very in touch with the Queen. We're good friends.
Right, the monarchy over there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, if you just Google Aaron Blaisdell, you'll find me and you'll find my Twitter. I think it's Aaron Blaisdell, you know, at Twitter or whatever.
Okay.
All that stuff.
At Twitter, yeah.
And I'm at Twitter. You know, whatever that is. I don't know how they arranged, you know.
No, that's right. It's Aaron Blaisdell at Twitter.
At Aaron Blaisdell. Oh, I guess it's Aaron Blaisdell when you're on Twitter. That's how you...
Honestly, I'm not. I'm not on Twitter, but I did know that that's wrong.
Okay.
It just
I'm on
funny.
Twitter enough where I forget how it's all the handles work anyway. Also, Pigeon Rat. If you Google Pigeon Rat, that's my... Because I work with pigeons and rats and hermit crabs and people and lots of animals.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find my lab website there.
Any quick hermit crab fact? Ooh. I had a hermit crab when I was very little, which I loved.
Well, so did I. That was my first pet, was a hermit crab.
Okay.
Yeah. They make good pets.
Why did you decide to get into hermit crabbing?
It was from an undergrad that worked in my lab. He went to the Caribbean for a summer class. It was a great place to do a summer class, right? And they ended up doing some behavioral field work with hermit crabs. Oh. So he came back to my lab after that and started the fall quarter. And he was like, oh, can we get hermit crabs in the lab? We want to do some more work with them.
Cool.
And so I was like, sure.
Yeah.
Why not? We found a broom closet, cleared it out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they don't need much. And so we have, you know, a nice temperature and lighting and hermit crab food, you know, nice little hermit crab habitation. We got hermit crabs and they are very interesting,
awesome.
Even though they're much simpler.
Okay, great. Well, I expect to have you guys back for the new Lion King, where I assume everything will happen the same as the old one.
So we essentially have seen it already.
And we can, we can have a very similar discussion.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
If not, I could
just replay the podcast.
No, let's redo it. Let's do a remake. I think we should honestly transcribe everything that we've said here today, print it out.
And just read it.
Read it off. Yeah, as a script. A
great idea, yeah.
Maybe we could change roles. I could be Robin.
Oh, okay.
Robin could be me.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, I know you're self-proclaimed lazy, but I would love for you to read all
that. I've transitioned before. I can be a different person.
Okay, great. So we'll see you next time when we'll have Robin as a scientist and Aaron as our comedic guest. And maybe I'll just try and change my voice in general. And maybe I'll just play it like as a Scottish person or something.
All right.
Right?
I love
Worth it.
Yeah.
Okay, great. See you next time. Bye.
Thanks.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our very helpful intern, Lucas Bollinger, engineered this session, and our executive Pumbaa-ducer is Brett Kushner. Follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show for behind the scenes photos and more. Feel free to send me an email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. Let us know if there's a movie you'd like us to discuss and any other thoughts you have on the show. And of course, rate us and review us on iTunes. That lets other people hear about the show. So we all really appreciate that. And I will see you next week. Take care, good luck, and bye-bye.